Welcome to Flip the Script, a mental health podcast. I'm your host, Jana Cohn. Whether you know the darkness of depression yourself or have supported someone in their pain, you've come to the right place. My mission is to empower you to take control of your mental health because nothing else in this entire world matters more. If you're listening in the midst of depression right now, I hope this show gives you assurance that you are not alone and that life doesn't have to be so hard. But you must first desire to feel better and get better. This podcast is a step in the right direction. If you're listening because you're walking alongside someone dealing with depression, thank you. You can always find me on Instagram at jana.cohn and be sure you're subscribed to my email list in the show notes so you never miss an episode. Together, we can flip the script on mental health. Enjoy. You are about to fall in love with my hometown friend, Maggie, on this episode. Maggie has never done any sort of interview or spoken so publicly before we sat down. She has been open on her personal social media and, of course, with her inner circle. I tell you this because I want you to know that Maggie represents every woman listening. Alcoholic or not, she is just like you. Wife, mom, business owner, dreams of nursing school. Everything looked just so right. But the moment she started cooking dinner, she knew she could start with a drink. And then when the kids went to bed, it was on. Her words, not mine. I know this episode is going to hit some hearts, and I want you to know my DMs are open, and Maggie's contact info is in the show notes if you want to reach out to her directly. Enjoy. Maggie, I am thrilled to have you on. We have known each other for years and years and grew up in the same town. And to see this podcast come to fruition, and I knew as much as you started sharing your story that we're going to get into, from addiction to alcohol and overcoming that, I knew that I had to have you on as a guest. So just thank you from the bottom of my heart here for agreeing to come on the show.
Oh, absolutely. And thank you for having me. And happy International Women's Day.
I know. I can't believe that. I was like, what are the chances we're recording today?
I know, and it's all about women. And you know, it's funny because I was thinking about, you know, this yesterday, and I am one that when I clean, when I think about things and I organize and I start organizing, and I was thinking about this, and I was, as I was cleaning, I was listening to, because girl, I'm in the rabbit hole with you with that Murdahl trial. And I'm such in a show hole now because it's over. Not that I want anything more to happen, but I am just like, okay, is there any other tidbits? And there was a man talking on it, and you've had such amazing women on here that really have the background as far as like academic backgrounds to talk about mental health and different things. And I'm like, well, you know, I'm not really that person. But then I heard this guy on the podcast say, he was like, well, he was talking about expert testimony, and not that what these women said is not important, but he said, you know, expert testimony is there for a reason. It usually gets canceled out. The one that the jury listens to, which is our peers, is the witness. And that struck with me. I was like, I'm a witness. Like, I'm a witness to this. Like, I'm living it. I have lived it. I've been through it. So, you know, I'm not an expert on it. I don't claim to be. I just know my journey. And the more women I talk with, and my sober sisters and my sober curious sisters and all those out there, we all kind of have this similar story. in a lot of ways. So it's a really, it's an honor to be here as a witness for this, and to hope that anybody that I can help and that can relate to, I pray that that happens.
Yeah. That's so powerful. I like that wording, being a true witness, because it's one thing to listen to an academic on, theories and science and whatever on any topic, but it's a completely different ball of wax when you sit down and you talk to someone who has lived through it. And I feel the same way when it comes to depression. And a lot of times we get in our own heads and think, well, who am I to speak to this topic? Because, I'm not a licensed therapist or counselor, and I don't have any particular certification. But once we flip that narrative to, like, actually, who better to talk about it than someone who has actually lived through it? To me, that's the ultimate qualification. And you definitely fall into that category. So I think that that's a wonderful kind of self-realization. And so, Maggie, tell us, because I know there are going to be people listening that haven't suffered with alcohol addiction, and then there are people that are going to listen who have. So take us into the life and the day-to-day of someone suffering with addiction to alcohol. What was that day-to-day like? Was it a certain time of day that you looked forward to? Was it all consuming all the time? Kind of paint that picture of your reality at the time living with that.
The reality of it was really just, I was a sneaky drinker. Okay. So I was, that mom that, was the cheerleading coach, was the class mom. Let's bring cupcakes. Let's do this. I own my own business. I was, doing all these things. Honey, I ran a 5K hungover. Like, I did mud runs. I did, I would do all these things in my life. And one thing I have come to find out is that it was like, hey, look over here at all that I'm doing so you won't see this other part. So you won't see that. So it really just had to do with deflection. But then, honey, when the babies went down, and right before, when I would cook dinner, I would have a drink. I always looked forward to cooking because I knew I could have that drink while I was cooking. And Jeremy, my husband, would come in and we would talk about our day. And then by the time supper was ready, and then, then we had to get ready for our next day. So the kids were getting ready and doing all that stuff and going to bed, and then it was on. And then it was, it started with beer. And then I'm a beer girl. I always have been. I love the taste of beer. When you're little, like your dad's out grilling and like he gives you that first sip of beer when you're little. And most kids are like, bleh, My daddy said that I was like, and he was like, oh. So I've always been a beer girl, but as it progressed worse, I noticed I went to wine, and then I went to Tito's, got to vodka, and that's when I started noticing it wasn't about the taste of it anymore. It was chasing that drunk. I was chasing that numb feeling of just trying to get out of that space of who I was and just the numb. And it was crazy. And you think about the fact of, you know, and then the next day waking up and being hungover and feeling so bad and being like, oh, good morning, kids. And like putting on this face and like, let's get ready for school. And do you have all your things and all this stuff? And then, you know, I just couldn't, you know, I went through my day knowing that that 5, 6, 7 o'clock was going to come around to where I could start again. And then I would go without my, I would go out with my girlfriends and I would do things. And they're always like, well, we never knew. Well, I would have a couple of drinks with them. But then it's when I got home, you know. So, and it really, it got to the point to where I would be on the weekends with my husband and we'd be chilling out drinking and having a cocktail while watching a movie. And I would go and sneak in between drinks beside the refrigerator and take shots of vodka. Yeah. It's not pretty. It's not a pretty picture. It's not something. So I was not that mom at the game filling up her Yeti. I didn't bring my Yeti cup full of alcohol. I didn't do that. I would, I was very sneaky about it.
Wow. So just, okay, I'm thinking like visualizing this because I really like to know when you're in the thick of it, like where your mind is. And so would you, you know, you would start around dinner time cooking, you know, have a glass of wine or beer or vodka, whatever it was. And then would it go well into the early morning hours or did you, were you sleeping or were you not really sleeping? What was that like? Like after the kids went to bed, because I feel like that's such a thing, like this mommy wine culture.
The mommy wine culture, girl. I'm gonna be real right now. I fucking hate the mommy wine culture. I hate this. I hate the fact that you think you deserve something for taking care of your children and for doing, and like, yes, you've sacrificed for your kid. Yeah, of course you sacrificed for your children, but you know what? You also deserve to have the next best, your day, the next day to be the best day and to wake up feeling whole and good and, you know, and yeah, it's not perfect and it's not beautiful, but you're present and you're there for your kids and you have clarity and all the things that just come with that. Because at the time when I was numbing myself from all the bad that had happened to me in my life and the trauma, I was also not letting anything good in. I was not letting anything good in either. So like, and my kids' achievements and those other moms that were like, oh my God, she does this and she does that and she does this and she, who cares? Who cares? Your kids deserve to see the best of you at home. It doesn't matter. It doesn't, like, I can't express enough, ladies. It doesn't, what somebody else thinks of you is none of your fucking business. It's none of your fucking business. And it doesn't matter because they're just going to move on to the next person. And guess what? Your kids are going to see you frantically at home trying to make these cupcakes perfect, trying to make this whole life, this whole illusion perfect. And really what we're doing, what I'm trying to really do with this, my alcoholism comes from me being a perfectionist, me coming from an overcritical mother, who God help, you know, but she came from an overcritical mother. And, you know, and we can say, you know, my grandmother was an alcoholic, my grandfather was an alcoholic. So breaking that cycle is important. But what I'm trying to do is break the cycle of perfectionism for my children. because that's what's important.
The people listening right now, they can't see, but your shirt, I love what it says, perfectly imperfect. I love that. That's it.
It's everything, and you have to understand. And whenever you make yourself vulnerable to that, and you understand it, and you believe that because you've done the work and the self-awareness that comes with being sober. So it's not, yes, my hurdle was alcohol. What's your hurdle? What's your hurdle? Is it shopping? Is it food? Is it all these things? Just whatever it is, like, just get past it and move forward and become self-aware. Like, be just that, because once you break free from that idea of being perfect, that we get put on us, because we are supposed to be exceptional without, because I'm not a feminist. Like, I mean, I love women and I think women are beautiful. And my girls, I made them watch Suffragette. And I'm like, you better go vote, because these women fought for it. Women have constantly had to fight to get these things that we're able to do that you might take for granted. And I think women forget that, like, we are supposed to be like these exceptional people, but don't have the same equality. Like, there's no equality there. There's no, you know, there's no balance. So how are you supposed to feel your worth if it's not even recognized? So you have to find it in yourself.
Yeah. So how many years would you say your alcohol addiction lasted for? And what, how many years, what age range were you?
You know, in high school, I drank. But, you know, I could cut it off. I was a partier. I had a ball, you know. I had my oldest, Peyton, at 21, and on Friday nights was my nights to go out, but I also had to drive home to her. But, you know, it still was never enough, but I knew I had responsibilities to take care of. And then into my probably early 20s, and then I was good. And then probably it started about 29 to 37, 8 years of like hardcore in the thick of it. So 8 years.
Looking back, I know you mentioned, you know, your friends didn't see it because you were really good at hiding it. And looking back on that, do you think that your husband had any indication, or were you really, really good all the time of hiding it?
Oh, my sweet Jer Bear. The thing about it is that whenever I got sober, I'm sure we'll talk about whenever go through that process of how that happened. But I remember whenever I finally came out with, you know, I'm an alcoholic, I remember we were sitting on the couch and Jeremy looked at me and said, it's really hard for me to call you an alcoholic. It's really hard for me to say that. You know, you don't look like an alcoholic. I said, Jeremy, I abuse alcohol. And he said, yes, you do. And I said, I'm an alcoholic, babe. And that's okay.
Yeah.
You know? So. Yeah.
So tell us, let's just go there right now with that story. What was the defining catalyst that finally made you quit after almost 10 years? No, what was it?
Well, can't ever go there without this.
That's okay.
Thank God for waterproof mascara. It was one night I had fixed like a huge meal, like cube steak gravy, mac and cheese, green beans, like, you know, all the Southern fixings, girl. And I mean, I'm sure when I listen back to this podcast, I'm gonna realize how much cornbread I have in my mouth, but in my speech. But and it was one of my friend's favorite meals, so I went over there, and I took Peyton with me. Patey, I took her with me, and we took her some, you know, food, and we started drinking champagne. And the next thing I know, I woke up the next morning in my bed, and I had blacked out, but I'd also driven Peyton home. But before that, you know, you quit. Addicts quit every day. Does that make sense? Like, every day we wake up and we're like, you know what? Today's this is it. And then it's almost like, you know, I'm a woman of faith. God is my co-pilot. But I also believe in everybody has a right to have their higher being. So when I talk about God, if you want to use this in any way, just your higher being, or, I mean, if you're, you know, agnostic, however you choose to believe, you know, it was crazy how, you know, every day you quit, but then I think there's always the devil just brings in ways to be like, because you're weak. He preys on the weak, right? So, you know, something would happen, but I was also putting myself in a toxic situation with a person. Yeah, I was running a business, I was doing all these things and putting myself in really stressful situations and trying to prove something. And I'm a firm believer that if you are trying to prove something, you're not living your purpose. So as long as I was trying to prove all these things to everybody else, I wasn't concentrating on myself. And so I would always end up back in that vicious cycle. And I noticed that I started not feeling well. I started really not feeling well, like not good, like just. And the justification of an addict's brain, because I am diagnosed with generalized anxiety disorder, so I have GAD, I have, you know, a mental illness as well. I like to call myself chemically challenged because I'm chemically challenged in serotonin and alcohol, like all the things. And I went off my Zoloft because I thought it was making me gain weight. Not the copious amounts of wine and liquor that I was drinking every night. So I went off my Zoloft and I was off of it for a year. And that's really when me and, like, Jeremy started having a lot of problems. Like, it was like my alcohol was affecting every part of just nasty. I went to the doctor and my resting blood pressure was 158 over 111. My urinalysis, I mean, my pee was like apple cider vinegar. I mean, it was just like that. I said, well, I'm going to quit drinking for 30 days. And they gave me blood pressure medicine. I quit for a week. And then that next weekend, we went up to a friend's lake house. And I said, Jeremy, this was not before, like, I quit. This was all before. And I said, do you mind if I drink? Because I, you know, pronounced to the universe, you know. And he was like, you do whatever you want to do. Because Jeremy was aware, but he was also knew that I had to do it for me. That night I went and I drank and I tore it up and I got back into that same, of course, because, you know, I can't have just one. The next morning I woke up and I was throwing up and I had diarrhea and the blood vessels in my nose were popping. I was bleeding out of my nose. I mean, it was like my body was physically rejecting that alcohol. And that was in August. And then that October 7th, 2018, after that happened, was it for me. That's the last time. That was my sober day. Oh, and actually something really cool, ladies, that if you ever want to do, is what I do is you can get an app. And let me find it here. that and it gives you all the perspectives. And as of today, let's see, my last milestone was 1600 days. The money that I've saved, $32,240. The time, 8,060 hours.
Wow. What is that app called? Wow. Wow.
When I am sober.
You know, had that final straw moment and, you know, you woke up that next morning and realized you had driven home and that was the catalyst for your change. Was it over at that point? Or did you have inner dialogue still wanting a drink that next night? And what was that like? Were you done?
I was done, but the reason why addicts find Jesus is because you've been through hell. You have been through it. The detox is awful. I was able to detox at home because I had a really good support system. But I did it medically assisted with Klonopin because quitting like that cold turkey can cause you to have a seizure. Different things. Went back on my medicine, my Zoloft, on my blood pressure medicine again. So I was involved with my doctor. So it's not something that you want to do not medically assisted, for sure. And the detox was awful. I would take 5 Klonopin and still feel like I was crawling out of my skin. Like it's not fun. And I go back and it was during Halloween, which is, I love Halloween. I'm a good Irish girl. So it's like all the Halloween, cause it's actually harvest and Samhain and all that. So it's the Irish New Year. So I love it. And so there was all these Halloween shows on and I was watching them and I was watching this cooking show and I kept watching it over and over and over and over again. And for some reason during detox, it just kind of soothed me. And it was chaos. It was stupid. They did not return. Like it, I go back and watch it now and I'm just like, what was like, but that's where my mind was. It was just chaotic. It was crazy. And, you know, and people think, okay, I've gotten through detox. I'm good. It's actually not true. There's this thing called the pink cloud. And one thing that I did, because, you know, I am getting my BSN in nursing right now. And I love the way the human body works is I dove into educating myself as well. So, and I'm a reader. So I read a ton of books by women who've been through the same thing that I have. And I also educated myself on what was going on with my body and my mind. My mind was the most important because it's all, you know, you know, it's all your mindset. You are retraining your brain. I mean, you have to, or otherwise you're not going to make it. So I went and found out that there's this thing called the pink cloud. And the pink cloud is after you've conquered your detox. And you've probably seen people on social media that says, oh yeah, I'm 45 days clean, to God be the glory. You know, not saying that they don't feel that way. And you just see these posts every day about being so grateful that they're sober and that they're good and, you know, whatever their DOC is and everything. And then about a month later, they're gone. They're not on social media anymore. Well, they were on that pink cloud, and that pink cloud is when you're feeling good, your body is healing, your mind is good, you're recreating these relationships with these people that you could have, that you've damaged. You know, a lot of people, you know, that might have not had the luxury of having their children, get to see their children, and all these things. It's all these beautiful things. But then it's beautiful, but then you realize it just started. You got to do the work. You got to find your why. So why did I go here in the first place? Because if
Right.
you don't do the work,
I
you're
think that's
never
so
going
important
to get through
because
it.
I can relate in the sense of, when I did ketamine infusions, you definitely have this period of an afterglow because you feel so good for the infusion or from the infusion, you feel those symptoms of depression lift. And then the dust kind of settles, and you're like, I'm still here. You're still the same person with likely those same tendencies. So that is when the work begins. And I think that that's so key to know because if you paint this picture of, you're going to come clean. You have all these people around you. They're supporting you. They're proud of you for coming clean about it. You have all this support. And when life returns to normal, quote unquote, normal, that's when the work really begins. And that period of like integration is what I sometimes call it, of you have to deal with the roots of the issues. And so after that pink cloud lifts, I think that's such a great term for it, the pink cloud. I love that. Then the work really begins. And so what were your next steps in that process? How did you begin that?
A lot of self-awareness, a lot of really complicated conversations with my husband, with my therapist. You got to feel it to heal it. You got to feel it to heal it, and it's not always pretty. And a lot of those people that are there to support you and love you and are proud of you for it, you're gonna have to turn around and be like, hey, you're also a little bit a part of the problem, maybe sometimes. And that's hard. And they have to be receptive to that. And and to my children, I was very honest. I never it, I, there was no hiding anymore because this was not going to be their future. They were not, because I put the, in my I projected my perfectionism on them, and then and the expectations that I had for them, my plan for them, so to speak, and I felt like my achievements, their achievements were mine, and if I had good kids, then so I, but I'm not an AA girl. But every addict works the steps in some way, shape, or form. It just depends on how you do it. But I personally, like, unless I'm in a situation, unless I have somebody reach out to me or something like that of this nature or like this that wants to talk about it, we can not rehash, but like, it's just hard for me to constantly live in that place of where I was. Of where I was, because I'm not there anymore. Like, I'm just not in that. My brain is completely different. The way I approach situations, like, I've learned to be proactive instead of reactive, the patience, the different things like that. So, just learning that. And for them to, ex you have to start saying, I'm sorry, but this is what I did. For me, I found the most important thing was is I wrote each of Jeremy and the kids in each an individual letter, on my handwritten letter, because and I don't think it's fair to apologize to someone unless they're ready for it, because then it's for you and it's not for them. So they have that letter. They could read it at the time and they could put it to the side, but it's there for them when they're ready for it and they're ready to receive that apology from me.
Yeah.
And we were packing up pay for from her apartment. She graduated. She's out in the world being a little travel welder right now. Not a little travel welder, like badass woman travel welder, you know? And and we were packing up her things and she was sorting through things. And I noticed she was putting all of the things like from where my dad passed, like in a box that is precious. And I saw the letter. But you feel like you're doing such, you know, like, wow, you know, my mom's an alcoholic. Like, and you think of the repercussions of that. Like, how's that going to affect them? How's that going to come back on them? But, you know, are people going to talk about me at the football game? You know, you just never know. We want them to be completely honest with us. We want them to tell us everything, like everything that's going on. And if they don't know that you're flawed and that you're an imperfect person and they make a mistake,
you know what?
They're going to feel like they can't come to you.
What an example and what a message you shared with your kids through your journey and in writing that letter and walking through this of, number one, recognizing and apologizing and then walking out your new, you know, sober life that they have seen for the past several years, giving them the permission to say, like, hey, I'm not a perfect person, or hey, I messed up. I'm sorry. This is how I want things to be going forward. So, you know, through your bravery, it gave your kids permission to turn around and be that same way, you know, to you. And that alone is such a lesson to teach your children, for them to see that in you, I think is huge. Yeah. Yeah.
Well, I think probably too, one thing that moms, I think have that what really hit home for me is people are like, what, as far as with my kids, what's the biggest thing is that they trust what they see. They're not getting a fake ass version of their mom. They're not getting an impaired version of their mom.
Right.
It might not be pretty. I might not be having a great day, but it's real and it's me.
They know, or they think, I might have a problem with alcohol. What would you tell them? Like, what are the first steps for someone to deal with this? What would your advice to them be?
It's every day. You are doing things. You're doing something that not a lot of people can do. And I'm not gassing myself up. I'm just saying you don't meet a lot of recovering alcoholics, because alcohol is everywhere. It's the only drug that we have to explain why we don't do it. So that's very hard. It's something that you are going to have to be okay with being around. Now, I do have friends. I have sober sisters that cannot.
Yeah.
They just can't be in a bar. I have had to learn that it is my problem, not theirs. So if they can handle the alcohol, then I think that's fantastic. But, you know, educate yourself. Because you're going to feel crazy. You're going to feel weird. You're going to feel out of your gourd. That's where the medical assistance comes in. But also, like, you're going to know what happened to your body. Find some what's going on with your body, because your body's going to be changing in so many ways because it's healing, because you basically have been poisoning it for God knows how long. And, you know, it's funny because your one thing with me is alcohol gives you more serotonin, which makes you happy. Well, I didn't have enough serotonin anyway. And then I keep drinking and drinking and drinking and drinking. Well, my body really stopped producing serotonin after I went off my Zoloft.
Interesting.
Because, you know, it was expecting to get it from alcohol. So it's like, oh, we have enough, we have enough, we have enough. So whenever I stopped drinking, I completely went like bonkers. You know, because it was like my body really had to take some time to figure itself out and heal. And to take the time to heal emotionally, like forgive yourself. Like, you know, it's time to move on. It's time to forgive yourself, because you're not going to be able. If you want people to forgive you, you have to forgive yourself, because it's got to come from such a sincere, real place and a vulnerable place. Be vulnerable, be open, be unapologetically yourself. And I cannot wait until you have that first fucking belly laugh. Like the honest to God belly laugh. And know that you're funnier without alcohol, I promise. Like, I thought, you know, I was always been kind of quick-witted, but honey, like, it is on it. And like, just this, that first, like, honest to goodness sober, like, that shit is fucking funny, you know. Like, it's just in you, and you just laugh, and you're not worried about chasing that next drink. You're not worried about what's coming next. You're in the now. You're in the present. You're in the, you know, whenever your kids or your husband or your friends come in the room, pause that fucking TV. Give them your undivided attention. Soak in everything, all the relationships and the ones that are important. Know your triggers. Know your triggers. You are going to be able to recognize those triggers, because the same thing that puts you in the position of being an alcoholic, that's your trigger. So whenever you figure out that why, you're going to know that that's your trigger. And it could be a person. It could be somebody that you love so much. And it's just not for you.
Yeah.
See, you got to prioritize what's more important. You,
yeah.
Your sobriety,
yeah.
Or, you know, like, I've had to learn to be not a people pleaser. So, I mean, I still am, you know, but I have boundaries.
Yeah.
One great thing that I did is you can go to Clifton Strengths, and it's a survey, and you take this test, and it tells you your 5 strengths. Okay, your top 5. And then it gives you like a breakdown where you can review them. And my number one is I'm an achiever. I'm a learner, love to learn. I'm an activator. When can we start? I'm restorative. I love to solve problems. And then empathy. It is beautiful. It is beautiful. But in all this, I also take from this, okay, I'm an achiever. Okay, so I need to back up and reassess and realize that, you know, it says every day you feel like you have to be productive or you're not doing something. Well, that's not true. Lay in bed if you need to. A learner, you love to learn. So, you know, use that. An activator, when can we start? That also says I'm impatient. You know, so learning your strength can also help you fix your weaknesses. So if you go to Clifton Strengths and do that, like it really opened my eyes to, okay, these are my strengths, but also they can also be your weakness.
They have a problem. And you said, you know, I can't wait till you have that first, you know, big belly laugh. It seems like you go from this kind of pit of dissociating, whether that's from alcohol, or there are many other vices out there. If it's not alcohol for someone, it could be weed. It could be anything that they know, they go there, they use that to dissociate. And it's almost like you're not physically capable of experiencing this joy and living life to the fullest and embracing the people and the things happening around you, because half of the time you are so dissociated from reality. And so it's coming out of that haze and that cloud, you know, that alcohol provides, or weed, or whatever the vice is. It's all about dissociating from whatever the root issue is, and then being brave enough, strong enough, resilient enough to recognize it, deal with it, and then walk into the fullness that life can be without it. And that's what came through to me as you were talking, you know, when someone gets to experience that fullness of joy in life again, and that big, you know, belly laugh like you were talking about. And, you know, when someone that you love walks in the room, you know, pausing the TV or putting your phone down for a moment and really being present with them, you know, that is, I think if that is the pot of gold at the end of the rainbow of walking through this addiction, then that's worth fighting for, you know?
It is. And it's something you have to work so hard for. And the hardest part is the self-awareness, you know, because we're proud right. people. We don't see, and, you know, and it's a different kind of thing. I remember sitting there. And right before I got sober, I noticed a year before, I didn't admire the people, like the famous people that when I would see on TV that, you know, were beautiful or had the gorgeous clothes. I admired the people that didn't drink. I admired the people. I'm like, how did they do that? Like, how that can live their life and find joy without it? Like, those were my people that I looked up to. And I know that now, that those were the people that I'm like, wow, how do they do that? And I get that question all the time. Like, we'll be out somewhere and they'll look at me and be like, it's like, you're okay. Like, you're not drinking and you're okay with this. And I'm like, yeah, like now it doesn't bother me. It took me a year to get to where I could go to a bar. And 2 years is when I put it on social media that I was sober, because I had a lot of work to do and I was not open to questions because I didn't have any answers. You know, I'm daily working through it. And I needed to work on my marriage. I needed to work on so many things. And you have to be strong enough to accept the stigma of being an alcoholic, of what that brings. My worst fear was actually realized last week, that somebody would say something to my kids. And, somebody had said to one of my children, well, she went through a bad relationship. She broke up with a guy and it was a weird kind of situation. And the mom reached out to, one of my daughters and was like, well, your mom used to be a drunk. You don't want me to call her out. And so I get a phone call, and of course, she's like mad.
I mean, mad. Like, she's like, Mom, I just wanted you to know. I was like, Peyton, I have said it out loud on social media. People know that I'm a recovering alcoholic. So guess what? I don't care. Like, what? There is nothing that you can say to me that I have not said to myself that's even worse. And plus, like, why would anybody even go there?
Exactly.
Like, that, it's so stupid. And I called Jeremy and I said, my worst fear was realized and I don't give a shit. Yeah. It's amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. And again, what an example, too, for your daughter to see in that moment, you know, that.
No.
You know.
Well, you're going to have those moments to where you'll feel like when you're honest with them, but I feel like honesty is the best policy. And you're like, I think I've ruined my children. But I remember, you know, driving down the road too, we were going to the lake and, Ella Grace was in the back and just out of nowhere, she just said, I'm just never going to drink. She was like, I'm not going to do that. Like, you know, and I was like, well, Ella Grace, you can, like, if you can handle it responsibly, like if you can have a cocktail at night, like it's fine. You know, it's just, I can't. And that's okay. She was like, but Mom, look how good it's done for you. And I was like,
oh gosh, that gives me tears. Like, wow.
I know. Now you also, I still get questions and your kids are going to have questions and you got to be ready to answer them. I've been in the middle of the lake. I've been at the ocean with my kids and we're wading in the water and all of a sudden, boom. There's a question about my alcoholism or a memory that they have about it that they want to bring to me because they feel like they have a, you know, that they want to express it. And you've got to take it.
Yeah. Yeah. That's very true because it's not, recovery is a beautiful thing, but there's lots of good and a lot of bad that you have to, ugly truths rather than bad, ugly truths that you have to recognize and realize and talk about and allow the shame piece to come up but fade away because that's not the loudest voice in the room.
Yeah. And for, and I think the guilt as a woman anyway, the guilt that we carry anyway, like of not being good enough, of not being the perfect girlfriend, mom, wife, sister, friend, daughter, whatever that you carry, because I mean, is already there anyway. And you can, they call it mom guilt, but I just think it's just guilt in general. That you carry and then you put that on top of it. Well, that's when it gets, that's when it gets really hard. That's when most women are probably going to relapse because it's, you want to numb yourself again to that because to feel that you disappointed the people in your life that meant the most to you and you have to take it. And you have to feel it to heal it. And you have to process it. And you have to, I mean, that, but that's when you learn the lessons, man, too. So, you know, I've, you know, like if you look at a heart monitor and you have your highs and you have your lows, you have your high and you have your low. But if you don't have your high or your low, you have your flat line.
Yeah.
So, you know, like, I have to take those highs and I have to take those lows because let's be honest, if I would have kept going drinking the way I was and living the way I was, Mom would be flatlined right now. I wouldn't be here to enjoy any of it. Because at 37 years old, I mean, with blood pressure, I mean, I would have stroked out. If I would continue drinking. And my grandfather passed away at 44 years old from alcohol.
Wow. Wow.
Yeah. You know, and I'll be 42 in July. And to think how young I feel. And my grandmother, they, he was drinking like rock gut liquor that you would find anywhere. And, you know, he owned a business in Pickens, Four Point Tire Station. Most of my mom's friends like pumped gas for him in high school. He was a beautiful, great man. And, they told my grandmother that if he drank any more liquor, if he drank any more, that he was going to have a heart attack. Well, they said liquor. Well, grandma thought, well, he can still drink beer, because she didn't want to quit drinking. Yeah. And that New Year's Eve, he had a heart attack and passed away.
Wow. You know, it has to stop somewhere. You know, it has to. So, I cannot thank you enough, Maggie, for taking the time to share your story and to do so in such a brave way. So thank you. Thank you so much for taking the time today to chat with us. And I will put the information we talked about in the show notes. And I just can't thank you enough.
Thank you for listening to Flip the Script, a mental health podcast. I'm your host, Jana Cohn. If you'd like to talk with me one-on-one, I have private sessions available now to book in the show notes. And please, if this episode spoke to you in any way and you want to join me in flipping the script on mental health issues, the best thing you can do is leave a review on whatever platform you're listening from, or take a screenshot of this episode, tag me, and share to your social media. I'd also love to connect with you in the DMs on Instagram at jana.cohn. In the show notes, you can subscribe to my email list and never miss an episode. I'll see you here next time on Flip the Script.